Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Today on the program, we have stories from Dorothy Gundy, Phil Dierking, and Alice Bryant. Later, Ashley Thompson and Dan Friedel join me in the studio to talk about the words and phrases of March Madness in America. And as always, we end the program with an American story. This week, we listen to part two of William Wilson by Edgar Allan Poe. But first, here is Alice Bryant.
Fast-moving water spilled onto streets and into homes on Thursday during intense rainstorms in Lima, Peru's capital. The heavy rains killed at least 12 people in Peru, the Associated Press reported. It said the water, much of it dirty, now threatens to flood the city. Peruvian officials said on Thursday they expect the extreme weather to continue for another 2 weeks. Weather experts are blaming the intense rains on the weather event called El Niño. It produces a warming of surface waters in the eastern Pacific Ocean. To date, the storms are reported to have killed more than 60 people and destroyed 12,000 homes across Peru this year. President Pedro Pablo Kuczynski has declared a state of emergency in the affected areas. He said the government is prepared to provide shelter and assistance to those left homeless by the storms. Schools nationwide have suspended classes. In the past 3 days, the rains and mudslides have brought severe destruction to Peru. And the storms have caught people in Lima by surprise. The city, where it almost never rains, is home to 10 million people. One extreme incident happened about 50 kilometers south of downtown Lima. Shocked city residents watched and captured video on their mobile phones as a woman escaped from a flowing mixture of mud, wood, and farm animals. I'm Alice Bryant.
Hundreds of companies have expressed interest in helping build U.S. President Donald Trump's southern border wall. However, only one of them is from Mexico. Around 640 companies, mostly from the United States, have registered with the U.S. to design and build the wall. Among them are also companies from Spain, Germany, South Africa, Britain, Ireland, Puerto Rico, and Canada. The only company from Mexico is Eco Velocity. Located in Puebla, near Mexico City, the company sells cheap industrial LED lights. Theodore Atala is the owner. He is a Greek-Egyptian native who has lived in Mexico for nearly 20 years. Atala said his lights, mostly imported from China, are cheaper than his competitors. He wants to provide lights for the wall that many people in Mexico hate. It would only be on the Mexican side, because I don't think we would be allowed to work on the other side, Atala said in an interview. They said they only wanted American products. Two other Mexican companies told Reuters that they are willing to work on the project. Mexico's Cemex is one of the world's largest cement producers. It is willing to provide quotes to supply materials for the wall. And its competitor, Grupo Cementos de Chihuahua, has also said they might be willing to work on the project. Both companies have a history of projects in the United States. I'm Phil Dierking.
Angelina Jolie's latest directorial effort is a first for her and many others. The movie, First They Killed My Father, was filmed entirely in Cambodia and in the Khmer language. Last month, Jolie and the movie's producers invited thousands of Cambodians to attend first showings of the film in cities across the country. For many, it was the first time they had seen a major movie in their native language. First They Killed My Father tells of a young girl, Luang Ung, growing up in Cambodia in the 1970s. The violent Khmer Rouge government controls the country. It will be released to an international audience on Netflix in September. Filming in Cambodia and using the native language was Jolie's idea. Native Khmer speakers and language experts say it might lead to a new interest in Khmer. Rim Tit Penya is a Khmer language and literature student at the Royal University of Phnom Penh. He says Khmer is not a popular subject among students. He says, "I want to conserve Khmer identity and culture, which could be lost one day if no one cares to promote it." Penya says social media could be a special threat. He says it is quicker and simpler to romanize the script when communicating with friends online. The Khmer language is believed to contain the largest alphabet in the world, with 74 characters. About 20 million people speak Khmer. That is a small group when compared to the world's major languages, like Mandarin, Spanish, English, Hindi, and Arabic. Sok Sok is a linguistics expert from Victoria University in Melbourne, Australia. He says Khmer is on the rise because the language has gained the attention of scholars and researchers in the last 5 years. He says many new Khmer words have been created. The newer words are often more true to their meaning than those invented by older generations. For example, the new word for calculator means calculate machine. But the word for television, created by an older generation, means distant vision. Chan Samnap is president of the National Council of Khmer Language. He says there is support for updating the Khmer language. The mechanism for correcting spelling in formal documents, as well as improving the education system, are mechanisms which we have been using to ensure that the Khmer language is still good and strong, he says. Professor Terry Yamada is with the Department of Asian and Asian American Studies at California State University in Long Beach. She sees a need for more creative writing in Cambodian schools. Writing Khmer well in clear and descriptive sentences with a storyline other than for passing tests is not a high priority in the public schools, she said. She told VOA Khmer that the Cambodian officials need to work with people who write stories and other literature in Khmer. If the government were serious about supporting Khmer language and literature, they would need to establish publication support for new writers, she said. There will likely be renewed interest in the Khmer language with the Netflix release of the movie, First They Killed My Father. But Yamada says that movies are less effective in conserving language than books. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
We are getting wordy once again in the Learning English studio. I'm Katie Weaver, and here with me are reporters Ashley Thompson and Dan Friedel.
Hey, Katie.
Hi, Katie.
Hello, you two. Thanks for coming in. We are going to try another installment of Words to the Wise, our new program where we discuss, explain, and learn very current words and terms.
It's that time of the year again. The most wonderful time of the year.
My birthday!
Really? Happy birthday, Ashley.
Thanks.
Yes, Ashley. Happy birthday. Again. But actually, that is not the event Dan is talking about. March Madness has begun. I thought we should go over some related language.
Ah, yes. The big college basketball championship. It begins in the middle of March, and people definitely go mad over it.
But not mad as in angry, right, Dan?
Well, Katie, some people might get a little mad if their favorite team does poorly. Mm-hmm. But March Madness refers to the wild nature of the tournament. There are so many teams and a lot of games ending at the same time. Dramatic endings, especially. We'll hear about some of those endings later on.
And the madness also refers to the wild excitement the tournament causes. Actually, college basketball, or NCAA basketball, is very popular here in the United States. In many parts of the country, it's a lot more popular than the NBA, even, or National Basketball Association.
Yeah. So anybody checking out American news and social media will likely face some of the madness online.
That's right, Katie. The tournament really begins on Selection Sunday, and that's when a committee decides which university's teams will get into the tournament. They start out with 68 teams, and then it gets down to the championship game, which doesn't actually happen in March. It happens at the beginning of April. So we go from one Sunday in March all the way to the beginning of April.
Wow, Dan. March Madness, Selection Sunday. There sure are a lot of alliterations involved. Those are phrases where many or all of the words start with the same letter or sound.
And we haven't talked about the Final Four yet.
Oh, another one.
So we start out with 68 teams in the men's tournament and 64 in the women's, and then they start dancing, right, Dan?
Yeah, I've heard everyone say, oh, this school or that school, they're all going to the big dance.
Mm-hmm.
What is this big dance?
Well, the big dance, that's just what they call it for fun. They don't dance. They play basketball. It's like a big party for a few weeks. Each of the teams are ranked based on their performances during the regular season, and those rankings are called seeds. Each group of teams is put into one of four regions, and each region has the number one seed all the way down to the 16th seed.
Just to be clear, Dan, the word seed in this case does not relate to plant life, right?
That's right, Ashley. Seed has to do with the ranking of the teams in the competition, and they want to make sure that the best teams don't play each other too early. So there are four sets of number one seeds and four sets of number two seeds and so forth and so on.
So in other words, you want to spread around the competition to produce a better sporting event, kind of like a farmer spreads seeds for a good crop.
So it does come back to that literal meaning that I mentioned.
Mm-hmm. So before it began, a lot of people in the United States tried to pick which team would win each game of the tournament.
That's right, Katie. That's called the bracket. And it's a chart. It shows all of the teams and their projected next round opponent. But nobody knows for sure which team will win the subsequent games. So you choose the winner, the team that you think will win, and filter it all the way down to the Sweet 16 and the Elite 8 and the Final Four and all the way down to the championship game.
Okay, so it sounds like someone here has his own bracket all finished up. So do you want to tell the world about your brackets, who you've got picked? Who do you think, Dan, will cut down the net this year?
Cut it down? What, is this destructive all of a sudden?
Ashley, it is. There's a tradition where the winning team takes scissors and cuts down the net so that they can put it in their trophy case back at their university for future generations of fans to admire.
Ah, well, in that case, the net will go home to the University of Kansas.
Oh, really?
That's my guess.
Oh, yes. Dan, who do you think's going to cut down the net?
I think I'll go with Villanova, which is a small school near Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. They were the champions last year, and I think they can do it again this year.
Okay, cool. Well, I have no idea who might win. I'm not even sure. Now I know two teams that are actually involved in the tournament. I'm Katie Weaver.
I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Friedel.
Now it's time for our program, American Stories. Here is part two of William Wilson.
In the first part of my story, I spoke about my life at my first school and about the other boys, over whom I gained firm control. But there was one boy who would not follow my commands, who would not do what I told him to, as the other boys did. His name was the same as mine, William Wilson. Although he did not belong to my family in any way, he seemed to feel some love for me, and had entered the school the same day as I had. Many of the boys thought we were brothers. I soon discovered that we had been born on the same day, January 19th, 1809. Wilson continued his attempts to command me, while I continued my attempts to rule him. The strange thing is that although I did not like him, I could not hate him. We had a battle nearly every day, it is true. In public it would seem that I had been proved the stronger. but he seemed somehow able to make me feel that this was not true, and that he himself was stronger. Nevertheless, we continued to talk to each other in a more or less friendly way. On a number of subjects we agreed very well. I sometimes thought that if we had met at another time and place, we might have become friends. It is not easy to explain my real feelings toward him. There was no love, and there was no fear, yet I saw something to honor in him, and I wanted to learn more about him. Anyone experienced in human nature will not need to be told that Wilson and I were always together. This strange appearance of friendship, although we were not friends, caused no doubt the strangeness of battle between us. I tried to make the others laugh at him. I tried to give him pain while seeming to play a light-hearted game. My attempts were not always successful, even though my plans were well made. There was much about his character that simply could not be laughed at. I could find, indeed, but one weakness. Perhaps he had been born with it, or perhaps it had come from some illness. No one but me would have made any use of it against him. He was able to speak only in a very, very soft, low voice. This weakness I never failed to use in any way that was in my power. Wilson could fight back, and he did. There was one way he had of troubling me beyond measure. I had never liked my name. Too many other people had the same name. I would rather have had a name that was not so often heard. The word sickened me. When on the day I arrived at the school, a second William Wilson came also, I felt angry with him for having the name. I knew I would have to hear the name each day a double number of times. The other William Wilson would always be near. The other boys often thought that my actions and my belongings were his, and his were mine. My anger grew stronger with every happening that showed that William Wilson and I were alike in body or in mind. I had not then discovered the surprising fact that we were of the same age, but I saw that we were of the same height. And I saw that in form and in face we were also much the same. Nothing could trouble me more deeply, although I carefully tried to keep everyone from seeing it, than to hear anyone say anything about the likeness between us of mind or of body or of anything else. But in truth I had no reason to believe that this likeness was ever noticed by our schoolfellows. He saw it, and as clearly as I, that I knew well. He discovered that in this likeness he could always find a way of troubling me. This proved the more than usual sharpness of his mind. His method, which was to increase the likeness between us, lay both in words and in actions, and he followed his plan very well indeed. It was easy enough to have clothes like mine. He easily learned to walk and move as I did. His voice, of course, could not be as loud as mine, but he made his manner of speaking the same. How greatly this most careful picture of myself troubled me, I will not now attempt to tell. It seemed that I was the only one who noticed it. I was the only one who saw Wilson's strange and knowing smiles, pleased with having produced in my heart the desired result. He seemed to laugh within himself and cared nothing that no one laughed with him. I've already spoken of how he seemed to think he was better and wiser than I. He would try to guide me. He would often try to stop me from doing things I had planned. He would tell me what I should and should not do, and he would do this not openly, but in a word or two in which I had to look for the meaning. As I grew older, I wanted less and less to listen to him. As it was, I could not be happy under his eyes that always watched me. Every day I showed more and more openly that I did not want to listen to anything he told me. I have said that in the first years when we were in school together, my feelings might easily have been turned to friendship. But in the later months, although he talked to me less often then, I almost hated him. Yet let me be fair to him. I can remember no time when what he told me was not wiser than would be expected from one of his years. His sense of what was good or bad was sharper than my own. I might today be a better and happier man if I had more often done what he said. It was about the same period, if I remember rightly, that by chance he acted more openly than usual, and I discovered in his manner something that deeply interested me. Somehow he brought to mind pictures of my earliest years. I remembered, it seemed, things I could not have remembered. These pictures were wild, half-lighted, and not clear, but I felt that very long ago I must have known this person standing before me. This idea, however, passed as quickly as it had come. It was on this same day that I had my last meeting at the school with this other strange William Wilson. That night, when everyone was sleeping, I got out of bed, and with a light in my hand, I went quietly through the house to Wilson's room. I had long been thinking of another of those plans to hurt him, with which I had until then had little success. It was my purpose now to begin to act according to this new plan. Having reached his room, I entered without a sound. Leaving the light outside, I advanced a step and listened. He was asleep. I turned and took the light and again went to the bed. I looked down upon his face. The coldness of ice filled my whole body. My knees trembled, my whole spirit was filled with horror. I moved the light nearer to his face. Was this the face of William Wilson? I saw, indeed, that it was. But I trembled as if with sickness, as I imagined that it was not. What was there in his face to trouble me so? I looked, and my mind seemed to turn in circles in the rush of my thoughts. It was not like this, surely not like this, that he appeared in the daytime. The same name, the same body, the same day that we came to school. And then there was his use of my way of walking, my manner of speaking. Was it in truth humanly possible that what I now saw was the result, and the result only, of his continued efforts to be like me? Filled with wonder and fear, cold and trembling, I put out the light. In the quiet darkness I went from his room, and without waiting 1 minute, I left that old school and never entered it again.
That's all the time we have for today's program. For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for joining us.